Good evening.
Every time.
Go on, every week. Go on, my son.
Right, ready?
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Stick a pony in my pocket. I'll fetch the suitcase from the van. Because if you want the best, then you don't ask questions, then brother, I'm your man. Because where it all comes from is a mystery. It's like the changing of the seasons or the tides of the sea. But he's the one that's driving me berserk. Why do only fools and horses work? La 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 la.
Sorry.
Watcher.
How you doing, James?
Watcher. Hi, ex-pals.
How you doing? All right?
Yeah, good.
It's good weeks?
It's been a great week, yeah. All of that kind of been at work, but I've been looking forward to this moment, that's for sure.
Yeah, counting down the days.
So who have we got joining us on this episode?
I'll give you a clue. Very good. It's the one and only Mr. Chalice.
Yes. Boise's on later. We are. Oh, I'm feeling pretty nervous.
How I'm
feeling?
Very nervous, actually.
Yeah, this is a big interview, I think. Obviously, Daniel Hill, Andre Bernard.
Sue Holderness.
Head's making facial expressions to me, sorry.
Sorry.
But yeah, this is something that I can remember Boise from my childhood, basically, on TV. So
We have all met John before, though, haven't we? Several different occasions at conventions and at his stage shows and stuff. But he is a very, very nice man, and we do really appreciate him giving up his time to come onto the episode and have a chat with us guys about Only Fools and Horses.
What episode are we talking about later, though?
Slow Bus to Chingford today.
What's everyone's thoughts on that?
Yeah, it's not a bad episode.
It's all right, actually.
It's not the best. It's not the worst.
No, it's a good episode. I think as we get into series two, that's when the real fun begins, I think. Introduce a lot more characters.
Yeah. Series one, episode five, Slow Bus to Chingford.
We are cracking through these, aren't we? Episode five. How many's left in the series? Episode what? Episode six. That's it.
Then there's seven because Christmas Crackers is part of series one. That's a special Christmas special.
How are we going to do that? Are we going to do? This can be on the podcast. I don't really care. Christmas Crackers. We're going to be doing that like March at this rate, aren't we?
Doesn't matter. We can all pour crackers and wear Christmas hats.
Oh yeah. We'll sit around the table again.
In this opening scene, Rodney has a girlfriend or someone he's trying to get as his girlfriend.
Janice.
Is this the first girlfriend to be we see? Or I can't think over the last four episodes, has he been with another
person? Well, he's trying to woo her. I don't think he's been with anyone else before that. But he's trying to come across very cultural and intellectual, talking about art and painting.
She's not got a clue what he's talking about.
No. Don't go over.
My brother's a painter. Is he?
Ed said something there. I didn't hear it.
Sorry.
I only do one-offs. Good enough.
So Rodney's turned the lights down low to try and seduce his date for the evening, which is Janice.
You have to admit, she's a bit of a sort.
Not too sure I agree. Don't know, mate.
I think she's probably quite a sort back in the 70s, but I don't know what you guys think. But looking at them now, the dynamic isn't right. Those two have got no chemistry whatsoever.
Nothing.
Because Rodney does show quite a lot of interest in art in later episodes, doesn't he? And he's quite a sophisticated person, whereas she hasn't really got a clue. She's quite easygoing. She doesn't care about very much. She's not really got much of a personality.
And Rodney notices that, and that's why he resorts to get your bra off.
Exactly.
We are kindred spirits, Janice. Seekers of beauty in a broken, ugly world. Janice?
Yes, Rodney?
Get your bra off.
But I think this is quite strange, because I don't think Rodney, as a character, is normally that sleazy. Well, he definitely isn't in the later episodes, is he? I think he's he likes to treat a woman with respect. I can't imagine him saying that to Cassandra on a date.
Sort of, but we do. Dale references on and off, doesn't he, that he's into kinky uniform and
Rodders has got a dark side.
And
absolutely.
If you remember when he slaps that girl on the arse, goes
fancy a curry? Fancy an Indian? Yeah.
But I think there's a little snippet to that where he thinks, well, maybe Dale's approach does work to women.
Maybe Rodney's got a bit of 50 Shades going on that we don't quite know about.
But he's still discovering who he is. He's a young man, isn't he? He doesn't really know who he is.
He's got the horn.
Yeah. He's still building his character. So he can't really be
talk about in-depth things like art and maintain that, because he doesn't know who he is yet.
So he's having a romantic night in with his date, and all of a sudden, Del Boy just bursts in, puts on all the lights. It's a brilliant scene. The just sound, doesn't care less.
Hits the speakers.
Pours himself a drink.
Yeah.
Put him down, Janice.
That sound effect.
Don't know where he's been.
That sound effect when he kicks the record player.
Yeah.
Slapsticky, isn't it?
Del Boy just walks in, doesn't care, puts his feet up and has a drink and enjoys it and just doesn't,
you're
just
in
doesn't
then,
really realise that he's just completely ruining a nice atmosphere for Rodney and Janice.
He makes out that he's done Rodney a massive favour by getting his job, but obviously he's working on the Trotters ethnic tours in the background, laying the groundwork for how can I pay for this bus? I don't really want to pay any cash for it. But
at this point in the episode, we've got no idea what Del Boy's up to. No. We just think it's a genuine job offer for Rodney, don't we?
And he's very clever, Dale, doing that, offering it to him in front of Janice, because Rodney's not going to want to see like a deadbeat and turn down the job or seem scared in any way at all. So,
are you putting me on, Dale?
No, definitely. I've got a job for you, Rodney.
Hey, that's great, Dale.
Yeah, it's all right. You'll start off as a trainee NSO.
No.
Oh, yes. Who knows, my son, you know? You know, use your old filbert, keep your nose clean. A couple of years' time, you could end up as a, well, I don't know, a senior NSO.
Oh, I will, Del. I won't let you down, son.
What's an NSO?
Oh, don't be ghost, Janice. Oh, what's an NSO?
You don't know they're born, some of them, do they?
That's right. Tell her what an NSO is, Del.
NSO, Janice, is a nocturnal security officer.
Yeah, you see, it's a nocturnal security officer. That don't half sound like a night watchman.
Classic Del manipulating his younger brother, isn't it?
What I do think is weird, and, you know, shoot me for saying this, but, you know, it might have been all right back in the day, but how old do we think Janice is?
Probably late 20s.
Late
20s? Late 20s.
Yeah. No chance.
Rodgers is 23.
I wouldn't say
she's 21,
young.
I reckon.
Well, yeah, I think she's quite young, and how old's Del?
Well, he's 35, isn't he? He says, don't tell him I'm 35. He says, go west, young man.
Because he completely steals her away from Rodney. And I think that's a bit weird, isn't it? Having your brother steal your girlfriend or your potential girlfriend.
But he's so casual about it, isn't he, man? You know, oh, I'm just doing it so no one else pulls her.
And they mention as well later on in the episode about a pregnancy scare. Have you picked up on that?
Oh, yeah. At least I hope not.
Yeah, I know. It's bad, isn't it? But presumably, back in 1980, whenever. 81. That sort of thing was acceptable. But if I was Rodney, I wouldn't be very happy with Dale.
Janice is played by an actor called Gaynor Ward. Let's see if I can find out.
What else has she been in?
Do you know she didn't wear a bra?
We'll get her on. We'll ask her. Janice, get your bra off.
Rodney's putting on the traffic warden.
Made to measure, wasn't it?
This scene is very similar to one with Irene McKay.
Yeah, he holds the back of the coat.
Brilliant, so good.
Typical con man trick, though.
Yeah, it is.
She's been in Grange Hill.
Never mind that. How old is she?
Where was she born?
I should find out. This is compelling stuff.
She's been in a couple of...
I would say anywhere between 19 and 23. I bet she's the same age as Nick Lyndhurst.
She's been in The Tomorrow People.
All right, but how old is she?
It doesn't say.
Wikipedia.
But even if we do find out her age,
Wikipedia page.
Her age isn't her character's age. Yeah. And we know lots of people who are older play younger people.
And we're building up to Del offering a newly formed position at another Trotter company.
Trotter Watch. TW could be interpreted as traffic warden.
On the face of it, though, the job that Del finds Rodney isn't the worst job in the world, is it? If you're that desperate for money, you'd probably quite happily do it, although the hours are a bit rubbish, to work nights.
But... He's not paying him, though, is he?
Well, yeah, you don't know that, do you, at the time? No. But, yeah, you would be a bit annoyed when you find out that you're asked to do that and not being paid to do it.
How does he describe it, the job? Not a night watchman, but
Nocturnal Security Officer, NSO.
NSO, that's right, yeah.
An NSO, eh?
I don't know, I sound like a night watchman, Del.
Yeah.
Tell Ed what an NSO means.
Del and Rodney are discussing his duties.
Rodney's got his plimsolls on so he can run away rather than give chase, like he suggests.
Commentary on clothes design again.
Yeah, I love that. Commentary on clothes. I am the Gokwan of the podcast. winding up Rodney Nursey as quiet as a grave, knowing full well that it's going to make Rodney a little bit nervous.
I do really like the Only Fools and Horses stuff, which is shot on location. It gives it a completely different feel, I think. Mm. Don't get me wrong, I do love the stuff in the flat, but when I think of Only Fools and Horses, I think of them sat around in their flat.
Kind of an unexpected moment. Like, you know he's scared, and when you hear Dale doing the whistling the end of the tune he's singing. What's the name of the tune he's singing, by the way?
I come from Alabama with a banjo on my knee, isn't it?
Is it?
That sounds
yes. Yeah, I think so, but there might be various different versions of it.
Rodney, I used to be a security officer myself, not with Trotter Watch, unfortunately. I couldn't join them.
Well, you were an NSO.
I know. And I have worked in some shady places that of being just like that, and they freak you out, the slightest noise, so I know exactly how he feels.
He would have been absolutely bored stiff there. He's not got an office to sit in or anything, or to, for what I can see.
No kettle.
No Facebook.
Must be freezing.
Question is, when Rodney runs off, where does he run? Where does he go?
There must be an office or something.
I just sit in the office all the time.
Yeah.
What would you do, Ed? It's all right, you don't work there anymore.
Probably playing Space Invaders all night. Like collecting a piranha fish with your finger. Poor old Rodney has two jobs we're going to establish in a moment. Working as an NSO by night and potentially driving the bus by day for Transethnic Tours, which Dale's about to introduce Rodney.
I think it's quite funny that Dale Boy, without a thought about Rodney's well-being, just goes and gets him up at 8:55 after he's only been in bed for 20 minutes and lets Rodney think that he's going to be late for work. And he's like, no, it's okay, have your cup of tea. Trying to think, oh, cheers, Dale, you're a real pal. Yeah. He's only been up for 20 minutes.
Yeah, Dale is pretty rotten to him, isn't he, in this episode? I just had a thought of the whole observation of this episode. Grandad has quite a lot of lines, doesn't he, in this, in comparison to any other episode that he's been in.
That's a good point, yeah.
Whether or not they're trying to establish his character a little bit more in this specific episode, or they just wanted to include him a bit more in it. I feel as if you learn a lot about him in this episode.
Yeah, you learn a lot about his character, I think.
Yeah. Good old Leonard Pierce.
Can I just go back to the Actress Gain Award?
Oh, update.
Well, I don't know.
Gain Award update.
I didn't know this, but
I'll put in a nice little jingle here. Gain Award update.
Well, you're going to be wowed by this.
Go on, then.
Gain Award, Janice, was Nicholas Lyndhurst's girlfriend at the time of filming the series.
No!
Really?
That is an exclusive.
Is that a verified fact?
It's a IMDb fact, apparently.
So I don't know how reliable that is, but
we'll go with it because it sounds great.
Yeah, we'll start the rumor here. Mm. Blame us. Just make sure everyone listens to it, our podcast, before they come back and blame us. We're happy.
Do we know what's happened to Gain Award now? I'm quite concerned.
I don't know. I just want to get him on the show.
Yeah.
That's really interesting, isn't it? That little fact there. Mm. I love how relaxed Dale and Grandad are in this episode. They're sat down in almost every shot relaxing, and Rodney is running circles around them both.
And Rodney's working nights, he's going on dates with his girlfriend.
Yeah.
I know, and Rodney's thanking him for it as well. He said thanks, Dale.
It's a naivety of...
how are we doing?
Yeah.
Well, very good, very good.
One more steak dinner, we'll crack it.
I do think Dale and Rodney's relationship in this is very different to how it is in the next series and future series, because Rodney is well known for sort of questioning Dale on all sorts of stuff in the later episodes. But with this, he just sort of goes with it, doesn't he? Mm. And thanks Dale for doing all these absurd things.
I think it's down to his age. He's a young, naive lad, isn't he?
Yeah, I guess so. It could a lot of it be to do with his age.
It's quite believable, actually. As time goes by, he's going to be a little bit more, confident to question Dale's ethics.
In previous episodes, we've discussed the decoration in the flat. And on the previous podcast episode, which was
second time around,
we did notice that the famous portrait of the elephant wasn't in the Trotter flat. It was replaced by a landscape of a bridge. And in this episode, you can see where that where the painting was once hung is now a painting or a photograph of a big juggernaut, I think it is.
Yeah, I think so.
So it's changing a lot until it hits the elephant painting, and that stays there throughout the rest of the series.
He's really now turning the screws on Rodney. He's going to basically say to work 24 hours a day for no money, but we're going to make loads of money out of this. The only thing letting it down is Grandad not handing out the flyers. Do you think it would have been successful even if they'd handed out the flyers?
I was about to ask that question. I don't see why not. It might not have been huge, but they were definitely sold more than one ticket.
I don't know. I mean,
yeah, I don't know.
Dale Boy insinuates that he's got Chinese writing, Arabic writing on there. Do you think that was really translated, or do you think it's just letters?
Probably just letters. And there is a line in this where he's saying that's Chinese, but it reads as Japanese or something like
Chinese,
that. So,
Japanese,
yeah. So, if they did have any Japanese or Chinese people on there, I'm sure they wouldn't be able to read what it says anyway.
Just to add insult to injury, though, not only has he made him work 24 hours, get up half hour after he's only just gone to bed, now he's making him. Make him a bacon sandwich.
Do any of you guys know where any of this outdoor stuff was filmed? Was it London or Bristol? Do we know?
No, this is no Bristol's 1989 onwards. So this is all parts of London.
I think I mentioned on previous episodes that we've contacted Perry, the guy who runs all the Only Fools and Horses conventions. And we'd love to have him on our podcast. And I know you did try to get hold of him at one stage, didn't you, James? Did you hear anything back? Is he going to come on and have a chat?
I haven't heard anything back from him. He hasn't replied.
Well, he's probably a really, really busy guy.
He must be incredibly busy.
But hopefully we're here back soon.
Yeah, hopefully. I did actually, interestingly, have a reply from David Jason.
Oh, did you really?
Yeah, so wow. He found the time.
Well, he got back to you.
He got back to me.
That's incredible. David Jason got back to you.
David Jason took the time to get back to me and say, thanks, but no thanks, and wish us luck. But
a couple of observations of this episode. I mean, these are nitpicking, all right? And I'd have to go back and watch the scene again. In a slow bus to Chingford, when Dale wakes up Rodney at 10 to 9 in the morning, Rodney walks out of Grandad's bedroom.
Does he?
That's true. That's a good point. I've subconsciously noticed that.
Yeah. His room's around the back, isn't it?
Are there any bathrooms in this episode?
I can't see any. Not in this scene, no.
What other observations are there, Tom? Or was it just that one?
In a slow bus machine, Dale says brig instead of big when he says about Rodney getting a job. You know, nothing worth mentioning about that. In a slow bus machine, at the beginning, Dale Boy knows what the statue is he is holding in his hand. But at the end, he doesn't. And the final one, where Grandad is counting up his winnings, it appears to be dubbed at the end. And I noticed that. It's like you've got a close-up shot of him counting it, but... Nothing worth mentioning that I think will make me go wow. The biggest wow is that Janice, actress, used to go out with Nicholas Lyndhurst, allegedly.
Yeah, that's an interesting fact, that is.
So she probably wasn't really wearing a bra.
According to John Sullivan, he got the idea for the script from his dad's favourite pub, the Duke of Devonshire. The guy who ran it was called Boycie. The place was a dive, but the guy explained it was ethnic English. Thus, the idea was implanted in Sullivan's mind.
It's quite interesting.
There's something that's... always nagged me a little bit about this episode. It's when Grandad's telling a story about the briefcases and he checks the briefcases for things that have been smuggled out of the factory he's guarding. And then when he says at the end, the guy left because he felt like he'd been victimised.
Yeah.
And I got done for it because of the fingerprints.
Yeah.
What fingerprints would there be?
What, in the briefcase?
Yeah, but they're all gone. He's already got them. They've been smuggled out and he's checked them. His fingerprints would be on them, but the guy's already taken them. He's left.
Good point.
So there'd be no fingerprints to check. Am I wrong?
You're not wrong, but in answer to Bailey's question a moment ago, where was this filmed? Ridley Avenue in Northfields, London.
It's a short and sweet episode, half hour long, and it's good. I think it's... Was it dark there?
They stayed overnight, I think.
Overnight.
Was it? Maybe it was cut.
I think it was.
Dale's realisation after how many years they've been running the company that the acronym TITCA reads out as TITCO. I mean, he's been running Trotter's Independent Traders Company for probably many years. Mm. Roddy points out that after Dale visits his dream of having, you know, TITCO on the building.
Maybe he already knows, but Rodney's just trying to get one over him, isn't he, for payback for the stuff that he's put him through.
I know at the front of the bus, there's a poster that either Dale or Rodney has made. It says Trotters Ethnic Tours. And it looks like a 10-year-old's done that in an art lesson.
Yeah.
It's just written on with permanent marker, and it's just got pictures of London cutouts of magazines. Brilliant. He's so passionate about it, he thought we would have put a bit more effort.
17 quid is a lot of money then.
Yeah.
1983, that's... must be close to sort of 60, 70 quid now.
What do you get for that? You get a meal, you get the tour, and what else?
Given it all a bunch of lies anyway, because he thinks he could just, people aren't going to know any different. We can say this is where Sherlock Holmes was born. He was fictional. Well, I say it got destroyed in the war.
So much of this episode is shot on location, isn't it? They must have had the road closed off, otherwise they probably would have been completely mobbed, wouldn't they?
Well, you say that, it's series one.
Yeah, I guess series one wasn't massively successful, was it?
No one would have known who they are, really.
Well, I don't know. David Jason was obviously in Open Hours before Only Fools and Horses, wasn't he?
Nevertheless, I don't know mob would be the right word. Maybe, I mean, they moved to Bristol for that very reason, didn't they? It was getting ridiculous.
It was probably shot in really early hours of the morning.
Mm.
It's quite nice about this episode, isn't it? That they leave on a positive note. Dale's still got a dream. He's still got really high spirits, hasn't he, about achieving things.
Well, don't you see what the dream's trying to tell you? As you're standing on that balcony with your red drink, just above your head in 50-foot-high neon lettering is the word... tit.
I think when we established that Grandad's being crafty, he's chucked away all the flyers. There's no doubt in my mind Dale would have got the 50 quid back from the lot. From the
lot of course, yeah.
They're down by a couple of days' worth of work, aren't they? They've lost too much.
You can see how Grandad just really enjoyed being at the flat, though, because there wasn't many scenes that he was outside of the flat, was there?
No.
Hardly any, in fact.
I can only think of
sickness
one other.
I can remember when...
Sickness. Russians
or homesick.
Are coming.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Russians. Oh, yeah, the Russians are coming, yeah.
The Russians are coming. The Russians are coming.
Second time around.
He was out, but...
Jolly
inside.
Boys. No.
Jolly Boys?
No, sorry, not Jolly Boys. That's Albert, isn't it? Sickness and wealth is what I'm thinking.
Yeah.
No.
Homesick.
Homesick.
Homesick. Slow bus to Chinkford.
Russians are coming.
Russians are coming.
What about Friday the 14th?
Friday the 14th.
There's actually quite a lot of episodes where Grandad is out.
And a song about a dead dog episode I've just not come to be.
Sing Old Shep.
Diamonds Are for Heather.
Yeah.
That's not Diamonds Are for Heather.
Yeah, it is.
Oh, yeah. I was thinking about, they go to Portugal as well. Actually, they get out quite a lot.
Oh, yeah, do you mean Bournemouth?
Benidorm.
Do you know what? He's got more of a social life than I have, I tell you.
That Leonard
Grandad gets out quite a lot. In fact, are there any scenes where he's in the flat?
That's strange, isn't it?
Yeah, you never see Grandad.
From us, he never leaves the flat till we realise he's never in the flat.
There's a list.
If he lived longer, the episodes that we've seen Albert in, would it have worked with Leonard Pierce? Does John Sullivan write episodes based on the actors he's got?
Well, he was
playing to their strengths. Albert's very slapstick, isn't he, and all about the visual comedy with Albert with the shaking of his head. And
that's a really good point.
I think that originally John Sullivan wrote the episode
Hole in One, yeah,
with Grandad in mind.
Yeah, I think they shot half of it, didn't they?
It worked really well with Albert.
Yeah.
If only the BBC could show the archive of that filming with Grandad doing part of that episode.
If there is a famous, well-known fan site out there where you can see photographs of some of that episode being shot, or filmed, rather, with Leonard Pierce.
Yeah.
And it's really strange to see. It is really strange to see, especially if you've seen Hole in One several times before. You're just used to Buster Merrifield, but it's very strange to see Leonard Pierce.
Mm-hmm. Feel quite sorry for Dale there, because he basically wasted 2 days. He's wasted... God knows how much on those flyers.
That's terrible what Grandad's done, really, isn't it? Like, they would have sold a few tickets.
Rodney's had a few sleepless nights.
Yeah.
I don't think he would have sold that much, though.
He should have known better than to trust Grandad, though, with the responsibility of getting those leaflets out.
Mm. Well, early in the episode, Dale was delegating who was going to do what, and Dale seemed quite proud that he was the courier, like it was the biggest job, and said, Grandad is in charge of sales. Dale should be in charge of sales.
He's the
best salesman you can get.
Yeah.
In that household. So a bit of a wrong decision made by Dale there, I think.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are honoured to be joined by the legendary John Chalice. J
John, good evening. How are you?
Well, I'm okay, James. How are you?
Very well. Thank you very much for joining us. We're just wondering, how does it feel knowing that Only Fools and Horses is still going strong, 35 years on, everyone's still talking about it, it's still very much the heart of the family?
Well, it's unbelievable, really. I'm amazed. You know, when I consider I did the first episode in 1981, for heaven's sake.
Yeah.
You know, and I, at the time, I knew it was funny, you know, but I had no idea it was even that the character was going to come back in another series. In fact, I didn't even know there was going to be a second series until it happened and the script came through the door, which I was delighted about because I say I thought it was funny. I liked it a lot. And no idea, really, I suppose, until about the fourth or fifth series. By that time, it was about 1985 or something. And you thought, oh, this has really got legs, you know, because simply because people were coming up to us in the street almost for the first time and saying how much they're enjoying it, you know, and they're looking forward to the next one. So then of course, it was over. We did the last shows in 2001. And then there was a spin-off series, The Green, Green Grass, for me and Marlene, which was brilliant. That went on for 4 years, four series. And here we are.
Still going strong.
2019, and it's still on every day.
It is, yeah.
On Goal. It's amazing.
It is amazing, yeah.
John, could you just explain the feeling you had every time you had a new script come through the post? It was obviously an episode that no one has seen yet, and you're about to read it for the first time. What did that feel like?
Well, it felt absolutely wonderful. I guess I had no idea, you know, from series to series, really, you know, if one was going to be in the show again. I mean, I only did one episode in the first series, and I think one in the second, and then maybe two in the third. I can't quite remember, but at that. Those early stages, nobody ever said anything, you know. So you were sort of in the hands of the BBC, and also, of course, John Sullivan, the writer, if you wanted to keep bringing the character back. And then Marlene came into the show, and you thought, oh, this is promising because he's brought in the leading lady, as it were. Yeah. So now there's Boyce and Marlene are sort of a couple. So you thought, oh, well, that's quite encouraging. But from year to year, really, you just had no idea. And even if you were in it, particularly when we started doing a lot of specials, you had no idea how much you were going to do. But it was always an absolute delight, you know, to get the script and open it and read it and laugh and think, oh, this is going to be brilliant.
Amazing.
Hi, John, it's Tom here. Nice to speak to you.
Mm-hmm.
It's Tom speaking. How you doing?
Hi. Very well, thank you.
Question about on Boyce and Marlene, probably the most recognised couple on screen in the comedy world. There was a Boyce and Marlene stage show, was there not, in the 90s, that Sullivan had written especially for you guys?
Yeah, hi, John. It's Bailey back again.
Hi, Bailey.
Hi, yeah. I just wanted to say, I don't really know the best way to say this, but I just wanted to say how much you and your Twitter account is having such a huge influence on Only Fools and Horses in 2019. We've met before a few times, and I know you're really, really generous with your time, but I think it's fantastic that you've got time for all the fans in the Only Fools and Horses community. I think the Only Fools and Horses today would be very different if you didn't exist with your Twitter account.
Agree with that one.
Well, thanks. Well, I'm glad it's having a bit of an effect. I mean, it's just...
A huge effect.
I never forget, you know, that... You know, the fans out there, the people who put us where we are, you know, if nobody turned their telly on.
That's a really humble thing for you to say.
We wouldn't be talking now, you know. So it's great to share things with people because I know how much it means to people. You know, I get so many letters and I meet people when I'm out doing the show, and it means a lot to people. You know, in a serious way, it's helped a lot of people through difficult times. You know?
Yeah,
definitely.
I think it. So I think it's valuable. I mean, I feel I owe the fans a lot, really, for providing the support, you know, that every show needs. You know, I mean, I've just been in Benidorm as well. The last thing I did was another massively popular show.
Yeah, we're all fans here, John, at Benidorm.
Yeah. Chips and Royce. Well. you must be receiving treatment of some sort. Yeah. No, you see, Darren Litton, who wrote Benidorm, was a big fan of the show, and that's the other thing. Is what's unusual about it for me is that it's not only really popular with the public, but also in the profession.
Yeah,
no, definitely, you know, is. Yeah,
I think they're envious.
The television awards, you know, and Benidorm was up for best comedy, didn't win, unfortunately. But
well, we saw a little clip of you going viral, John. Maybe show your disgust. I find that very funny.
Oh, yes, I thought, well, I'll do both reactions. I'll do the happy for the winner and also bollocks to it.
It's amazing how they can twist it, though, in the media, isn't it?
No, it seems to have been very popular, that. I was slightly embarrassed by when I saw it back. But anyway, no, I mean, meeting so many people from, you know, your peers, I suppose, you know, people in all sorts of areas of the profession, you know, soaps and travel programs and documentaries and travel. I mean, you know, all sorts of people coming up and shaking hands, saying how much they love the show. And, you know, it's just really, really heartwarming. And I think that's rare, you know, that's rare to have it as popular in the profession as it is in the public, you know. But it's a testament to John Sullivan's writing, really.
Absolutely.
You really are a lovely man, John.
That's true, yes. Thank you very much. I'm glad you noticed that.
John, where can we find information of your one-man stage tour and your books and things like that? Is it Wigmore
Books? Well, as I say, the website, yeah, Wigmore Books. Okay. This is my, we've got a publishing company, and this is where the autobiography has been published, and also a couple of novels, and also a nice coffee table book about the house and the garden we created. So I've got about five titles at the moment. So that's Wigmore Books, Wigmore, Wigmore Books, all in lowercase, obviously.
Brilliant.
.com. There it is. And so it'll give you links and so on, you know, to what's coming up. And Only Fools Convention, of course. I'm not quite sure. It might be in Blackpool this year. I don't know. It might be anywhere, really.
Okay. I will keep an eye out for that.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Okay, one last question, John. We're going to talk about the Only Fools and Horses stage show, which is going to soon be on.
Oh, yes, that's right. Yeah, I'm going to the evening night.
Ah, fantastic. Well, I was just going to ask you how excited you are about going to see it.
I'll be fascinated to see what how it works. You know, obviously a Paul Whitehouse fan, you know.
Yeah, he's brilliant.
Watching all his stuff, you know, very funny guy. And of course, John did a sort of prequel, didn't he, called Rock and Chips.
Yeah.
So it's sort of, not used to, but at least we've seen a lot of the characters played as younger people before, so that's not going to be a big jump, I think. So I'm sure it'll do terribly well, you know. The fact that it's in a big major West End theatre from the word go is extraordinary. I mean, that's wonderful. And I should think after that they'll probably go out on the tour and it'll do very well, as well as the Benidorm show's doing. I mean, that's doing massive business apparently on its circuit, you know, the live show, the Benidorm Live. So, very nice to have been part of both those shows.
Absolutely. Brilliant.
Incredible. John, another final question. Sorry. Have you got a favourite Boycie line in the show? Would you mind, reliving that moment for us and quoting your favourite?
Oh, I see. From the show, yeah. So one of my favourites was Chain Gang and they're trying to stop this guy making up with his chains and having pretend heart attacks and so on, and there's all sorts of bedlam taking place, and Boycie thinks he's going to take charge, and he says, "Don't panic, I am a doctor."
Amazing.
Yes, love it,
John.
And also the corollary to that, of course, let the dog see
the rabbit.
John, thank you so much for not only coming on this show but being a massive part of our childhood growing up with you always on in the background on TV in our family house. But thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
Great. Glad you've enjoyed it. Thanks for watching.
Thank you,
cheers, John.
Take care.
Cheers, John.
Okay, cheers.
Thanks, John. Bye-bye.
Eyes down, face down for a full hour somewhere. Off and running.
Joining us in this episode's quiz is a very special friend of ours, Mr. Dan Edwards, who I believe many years ago used to come around and watch Only Fools and Horses and chat like what we're doing now. How you doing, Dan?
Yeah, I'm good, thanks, mate. How are you?
Yeah, I'm very, very well. How are you feeling? Are you feeling confident about this quiz?
A little bit nervous, to be honest, but we just have to see how it goes, don't we?
Well, I do remember the last time we got together, your Only Fools and Horses knowledge was pretty good, so good, it sort of swept the floor with it. With everyone else?
Well, hopefully it should still be the same.
Oh, I'm sure it will be, unfortunately.
Well, today you're going to be facing Jolly Boy James. How are you feeling, James?
Not very confident at all, actually.
Dan, when's the last time you watched a slow bus to Chingford? Have you been putting in a bit of research today?
Yeah, I watched it twice today.
Oh, twice. Giving away numbers now.
You must be serious, Dan.
Jesus.
All right, so... So, are we ready for question one, James?
Yeah, let's go for it. Go on.
Thanks very much for coming on the show, Dan. So, can we ask you, what is your favourite Only Fools and Horses episode?
Yeah, I mean, my favourite one is probably the Jolly Boys outing, to be fair.
Yeah, good choice.
Good answer.
I like the longest night.
And that was you.
Any excuse.
Sorry, I've been dying to do an impression from that.
Chain Gang.
We'd love to have you over with us to discuss it properly, Dan, on maybe one of our future podcasts if you're around.
I'm up for that, mate. Just let me know when it's happening.
Dan, it's compulsory for every fan who comes on here to do an impression from their favorite member of the cast and a quote, so
no pressure.
It's probably gonna be Boise. Hold up, here comes the Ghostbusters.
Very good.
Classic. I want to call
that one.
Nice.
Excellent. Bailey's just disappeared.
Bailey's got a new pet dog called Albert, would you believe?
Oh, is he?
Yes.
Behave yourself, phone call Albert.
Oh, where are you going?
Down to Margaret.
Hey! Have you heard us singing that yet, Dan?
I haven't, no.
Well, did we ever release that?
No,
release it. It's on the bonus, it's on there.
Oh, it is?
It's our second episode.
So we all tried singing along to Chaz and Dave down to Margate, and we soon realised that they're both lyrical geniuses, and we had about 20 attempts, and we just gave up because we couldn't keep up. But if you do want to hear our awful attempt, you can find it on our bonus episode. So go for it, Dan, and let us know what you think. But thanks very much for giving up your time to be on the podcast. It's been really nice talking to you.
Cheers, Dan.
Thanks a lot.
And we'd love to have you on the podcast, so we'll be in touch and we'll work something out. So, guys, what do we think of that episode? Are we going to give it a rating out of 10?
Yeah, go on.
So what do you think, Tom?
I give that 5.5 out of 10.
5.5?
Ooh, quite low.
Well, like I said, it's the whole...
There's a pattern emerging, isn't there, I think, with the early episodes.
There's 7 series of multiple specials, and the show gets stronger and stronger for me. So if I was to give it an 8, 9, or 10, and then I give Jolly Boys out an 8, 9, or 10, it just wouldn't make sense because they're...
It's all relative, though, to the series, though, isn't it?
Well, you could... I'm not scoring like that. I'm just overall... Okay. 10.5.
Tom's got a more tactical plan up his sleeve. What about you, James? What do you think of the episode?
7.3.
Yeah, that's a reasonable score.
Yeah, I think so.
How about you, Ed?
I'm going to have to give it a 6. It's a bit slow for me, especially towards the end.
Well, it is a slow bus to Chingford.
There is that.
That's fair enough. And that's all he's got to say about that. I think I'd give the episode a 7. I do quite like it, but I do agree with what Ed said. It is a bit slow. But at the same time, it's got some really key points to it. And I really enjoy the episode. So yeah, it's a 7 from me. Just before we sign off, we thought we'd let you guys in on a very special event, and that's happening very soon. The event is called An Audience with Only Boise and Marlene, which is going to be taking place on Thursday, the 11th of April, at the Eastwood Hall in Nottingham. The standard tickets are £25 per person, or there's a VIP package, which is £45 per person. And with that, you get a welcome drink, a meet and greet, a professional photo, early entry, and many more things. So it's worth checking out, guys.
Yeah, definitely worth going to that, isn't it?
So one more thing before we leave you. Our next episode, we're going to be talking about is going to be the Russians are coming. So are you guys looking forward to discussing that?
No. That's one of my least favourite episodes.
I like Russians are coming. It's a unique idea, the whole script. But again, for me, it's a bit slow. But it's still a bit of magic from John Sullivan.
I think it's definitely a one-off. I don't think there's any other episodes out there throughout the whole series, which is like the Russians are coming.
It just feels a bit unbelievable, the whole lot. I mean, I like the way it starts off, but it just tails off a bit. I still think Dell would sell that.
You'll still score it at 8.5 out of 10, though, wouldn't you?
No, this will be one of my lowest ones.
It's definitely a creative piece of writing, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, thanks very much for your...
TTFN, Michael.
Thanks very much for all your downloads, subscriptions, and helping us break into the podcast charts, which was very exciting.
Oh, where we got to number 60, I think, at one point.
At one point, number 60. Oh, yeah. Before we toppled down.
We should make a big thing out of that. Because we've not mentioned that yet, have we?
We're on top of the pot.
Let's start with that. Saying we've received some really good news whenever it was, and just saying we've reached 60 in the iTunes podcast charts.
And like I say, we did ask you last week where you were all. We did ask you last time where you listened from, and I did a bit of investigating because I wanted to find out a little bit more about our podcast and who listens to it. Found out that we were quite popular in Norway. Bailey, you've heard from someone from Germany.
Yep.
Ireland as well. But interestingly, we've also found out we were up to number 60 in the podcast charts at some point.
Above Alan Davis and Chris Hardwick, the comedian.
Very, very briefly, I'm sure.
No less.
I don't think we're there now, but the point is we...
We were there. So thank you very much, everyone, for listening. We really appreciate it. Thank you for everyone listening to this episode. And a huge thanks for John Challis for coming on and having a chat with us.
And Dan for... partaking in the quiz.
Yeah,
thanks, Dan.
Cheers.
Au revoir.
If you want to get in touch with us, theafpodcast@gmail.com.
Or you can find us on Facebook by typing in the Jolly Boys Podcast, or you can find us on Twitter at @OFA_podcasts. And I think we're on Instagram. Are we, Ed?
Ed?
Yeah.
You're up.
Famously on Instagram with only _fools _horses. It is worth typing all that gunpowder.
Thanks again, everyone, for listening, and we'll see you next time.
Bon bouche.
Ajax, pow.
Yo.
30 crack dice and miles of carpet tiles. TVs, deep freezing, David Bowie LPs. Ball games, gold chains, water.